Everybody, I want to thank the organizers for inviting me to this wonderful conference. So I will be talking about recent work with Hiroshi Oguri, Natalia Savulina, and Kumun Bafa, and it has to do with black holes, quantum young Young-Mills theory, and non-perturbative topological string. If you, So there was an exciting recent conjecture by Oguri, Strominger, and Bafa, which relates topological Young-Mills theory as associated to beta deviance on X with Gromov-Witten theory on X associated to the closed topological E model. The statement of the conjecture is that, roughly speaking, that the topological Young-Mills theory is the absolute value squared of the Gromov-Witten theory. It should be pretty clear from the objects that this is relating that this really is a novel kind of duality. It is not mirror symmetry, and it is a different open-closed string duality than others that had been studied before in the context of topological strings, because it exchanges B-type and A-type objects. So this is a novel kind of beast. So in this talk, I will discuss this duality for a particular class of Calabi-Yau manifolds. I won't consider the more general case, but we'll consider these Calabi-Yaus, which are of the form rank 2 holomorphic line bundle over Riemann surface sigma. And this is Calabi-Yau when the sum of the degrees of the line bundles add up to minus the Euler characteristic of sigma. So this is the context in which I will be discussing this. So let me give you, in this particular context, a more precise statement of the conjecture. In particular, let me start by more precisely saying what the various elements in this conjecture are. So one element which is very familiar is the Gromov-Witten theory on X. As you very well know, the Gromov-Witten theory on X is counting holomorphic maps from Riemann surfaces of genus G into Calabi-Yau. And for phi, a degree D map, this is computing Gromov-Witten invariants, which are certain rational numbers which, roughly speaking, count holomorphic curves. Now, given this, you can define Gromov-Witten theory also when you consider the domain curves not to be connected, so for disconnected domain curves. And for that, I will define a Gromov-Witten partition function as follows. So this object is a generating function of disconnected Gromov-Witten invariants. Lambda here is a genus counting parameter, and e to the minus t counts the degree. So t basically is just the area of the base Riemann surface. So this Gromov-Witten partition function is what sits on the right-hand side of the conjecture in its absolute value square. The other object, well, to define it, consider n D-brains wrapping a divisor in X. And I should have said this, I guess, a long time ago. X, for, in my talk, is a Calabi-Yau threefold, and in this particular context, it is a rank 2 line bundle over Riemann surface. So just Calabi-Yau threefold. So divisor is a 4-real dimensional. So if you consider n D-brains wrapping this divisor, the theory on this D-brain is a topological Young-Mills theory on D with gauge group UN. More precisely, it is a theory obtained by topological twisting of the maximally supersymmetric N equals to 4 Young-Mills theory. And this topological Young-Mills theory has, in the past, been studied, in the physics context, by Witten and Waffen. Okay, so in this setting, I will take the divisor to be the divisor, the N-D branch wrap, to be a zero section of, let's say, L1. So the divisor itself is the L2 bundle over sigma. Okay, so in this context, because we consider topological Young-Mills theory then on this space. And moreover, I will turn on a particular combination of observables, I'm suppressing fermions, which will be relevant for us. So this counts the second term class, and this counts the first term class, with some parameters, theta and lambda. Lambda, of course, is just the usual parameter which quantizes the theory. Okay, so the partition function of this N equals to 4 Young-Mills theory, as was shown by Waffen and Witten, is actually computing Euler characters of moduli spaces of instantons. And in this particular context, it's computing, in other words, with these particular observables turned on, it's computing Euler characters of moduli spaces of UN instantons with second term class N and first term class N. K is essentially the Kähler form on X or on the divisor. In this case, it's actually, I take it to be a unit. In other words, it's a generator of H2 of X in V. So it's a unit volume form supported of sigma. Okay, so this is so in mathematics terms, it's counting moduli, it's computing moduli spaces of UN instantons. In physics terms, these Euler characters are actually computing the numbers of bound states of n d 4 brains wrapping the divisor, with n d 2 brains on sigma, and m d 0 brains. We'll impose appropriate boundary conditions, but essentially the bundle is flat at infinity. But this will be clear from later. I just want to define what the objects are. So the topological Young-Mills partition function is the object which sits on the left-hand side, more precisely, of the conjecture. More precisely than the conjecture. So let me give you a more precise statement of the conjecture. So it relates the Young-Mills partition function, which depends on N, the number of D brains, or the rank of the gauge group, UN, theta, and lambda. So this is related to Gremmel-Witten amplitude like this, with epsilon value square, where lambda and T are, well, lambda is the same on both sides, manifestly, and T is a particular combination of this particular combination of n, theta, and lambda. The imaginary part of T is theta, and T is proportional to n lambda, with the concept of proportionality being the intersection number, counted the times, of sigma and the divisor D, of the Riemann surface n D, divided by 2. So it's a very unusual, so this conjecture relates Young-Mills theory to absolute value square of Gremmel-Witten theory, if you want, to topological string partition function times its anti-topological counterpart obtained by complex conjugating everything. Um, let me start with what the statements are. In fact, I will not explain it in this talk. I will just I will just provide evidence that it's true. Why is it true? Gurdjieff will talk about it more. So in fact, this would be a precise statement of the conjecture if X were a compact Calabi-Yau manifold. In the non-compact case, you have to decide what are you going to do with boundary conditions and infinity. So a general statement of the conjecture in the non-compact case can in principle involve a sum in an appropriate sense over boundary conditions and infinity on the Gramov-Witten side. This is for a particular boundary condition on the Gramov-Witten side. Questions? Yes. Well, you use a UN gauge theory because in physics, because this comes from physics, it comes from string theory, and in string theory, the gauge theory on the world volume of N-D brains is a UN gauge theory. There will be some kind of a summing over copies. You're right, there will be some kind of a summing over copies involved, but because of this U1 involved there. But more questions? You really have to do this. Without that, the conjecture will not exist because it comes from physics. Okay, so why is this? I said it's an exciting conjecture. Well, why is it exciting? Well, it is exciting because Gramov-Witten theory is defined only as an asymptotic series. Genus by genus, it is counting holomorphic maps from genus G Riemann surfaces into X, with lambda genus counting parameters. So it's a power series in lambda, defined order by order in lambda. Topologically unknown theory, on the other hand, gives a non-perturbative completion for this theory, because it's defined for any value of lambda. So this conjecture provides a non-perturbative completion for the Gramov-Witten theory. However, Gramov-Witten theory being topological string, you can't define a non-perturbative completion for just a topological string. You have to take its anti-topological counterpart as well. This is why physicists are excited about it. In the context of large N transformations reality, transformations theory is also defined non-perturbatively. You can also say that as well provides a non-perturbative completion of the topological string. However, with a different boundary condition at infinity. The virtue of this particular one is that it exists even for a compact Calabi-Yau manifold. This is why this is a more general and a more exciting duality than Gopal-Kumar-Vafa duality, related to topological string and transformations theory. Okay. So I'll now explain how Gramov-Witten theory in X and the corresponding Young-Mills theory can be solved explicitly, and therefore providing a test of the conjecture. And this is the only test we currently have, the strongest test we currently have. Okay, so Gramov-Witten theory in X has recently been studied and solved by Brian and Pandari Pandey. Brian will tell you about it in a couple of days, in much more detail than I can here. So let me just sketch what they did. So, so what they do is they chop disco labial into pieces, thereby also chopping the Riemann surface into pieces, on which one can on which they can solve the theory, and then get the rest by gluing. Now, since they're chopping the collabial into pieces and getting Riemann surfaces with boundaries, that means that an ingredient in what they do is to consider collabials, which are line bundles over Riemann surfaces with boundaries. And they have to count, to solve the Gromov-Witten theorem, they have to count holomorphic maps with prescribed boundary conditions on the boundaries. In fact, there are two different ways. There are two different ways to think about this, either as having a Riemann surface just with punctures, or actually the punctures open up into boundaries. So, if you think about it as punctures, you have to specify the ramification types of maps on the three boundaries, on the three punctures. And if you want to think about it as boundaries, you have to specify the type of the boundary conditions of the map. That you have K1 boundaries of winding number 1 and K2 boundaries of winding number 2 and so on. So this is a question of then relative Gromov-Witten theory. Obviously, for a topological reason, on well, since you're just considering a single map with boundaries, the sum over all kj to the power of the winding has to be the same over all three boundaries for this to be connected by a single map. And so the question you're asking is to compute this object, which is then a partition function of the disconnected Gromov-Witten invariant with these specified boundary conditions at the boundaries. Furthermore, one can show that these objects actually satisfy gluing relation. Well, this is intuitively pretty obvious, but I guess quite hard to... if you have maps to Riemann surface sigma, which you chop into two pieces, sigma left and sigma right, you can get maps to sigma from maps to sigma left and sigma right if by gluing, but when you glue, you have to make sure that the boundary conditions on the left here and on the right here match in order just to be able to get a closure map. And then in doing this, there's some combinatorial factor involved of how many different ways you can glue them together. Of course, you're not gluing only the base Riemann surface. You're also gluing the bundle over it. And it should also be pretty clear that under gluing the left and the right hand side, the degrees of the line bundles add up. Moreover, they in fact show that the Gromov-Witten theory on manifolds of this type is in fact a topological quantum field theory on sigma. So that in fact all one needs to do is just compute partition functions on few basic pieces and then get the rest by gluing. So all they need to do is compute these two pieces. Okay. Now, in writing the partition function, the possible states in the Hilbert space, if you want, I have made a particular choice for the basis of states in the Hilbert space labeled by these vectors k, which capture the winding numbers at the boundaries. This is a particularly natural one in grammar business theory because it tells you about boundaries of open strings, right? However, there's a more natural, there's another basis which you might have chosen, which is more natural in the sense that the amplitudes are simpler. And this is the basis whose states are in one-to-one correspondence with Young tableaus. So there is some simple changes. So if k here is a vector of total degree d, there is some simple change of basis between between such k vectors and Young tableaus with d boxes. So I also have to tell you what the gluing rule is in this new basis of Young tableaus, and it's very simple. You just sum over representations. So match representation on the left with representation on the right, and sum over all representations. If you want, you might also decide to here to count to add a weighting factor which weights representation with R boxes, so this is degree D, with e to the minus t, if you want. But this is a pretty simple gluing rule. And moreover, well, of course, this is trivial if you're just summing over representations of the same number of boxes, but this is, you can, of course, sum over all representations. That is, you're summing really over maps of all degrees. That it is then that this weighting factor is useful. But this is a general object you can define, and from now on, I'll be summing over all representations. Okay, so, very good. So I want to, so all Brand and Pandripanda need to do that in this context is just compute the annulus, disk, and append. And I won't tell you how they did it. I will leave this to Brian. But I will just tell you what the answer is. So in this representation basis, the answer for the Gramov-Witten partition function is particularly simple. So in every one of these three cases, first of all, there's one amazing simplification which you will notice immediately, which is that the amplitude vanishes unless all three representations are equal. In the case of the pan, similarly in the case of the annulus, zero unless both representations are equal. Furthermore, you define a parameter q, which is e to the minus lambda. Lambda, I remind you, is a genus counting parameter. And then in terms of this q, every one of these amplitudes is weighted by q to some number times a certain quadratic invariant of the representation. It doesn't really matter what it is. The number that sits in front, however, is the difference of the degrees of the two line bundles. So really, I've suppressed some data on the left. In addition to what the Bayes manifold is, I also have to tell you what the bundles are. But the bundle data enters in the following way, just in the following way. Okay. Now there's one additional ingredient, which is this object D of R. So what is this? Well, the first thing to notice is that it enters the right-hand side as d to the power of the Euler characteristic, of minus the Euler characteristic of the manifold. Sorry, of the Euler characteristic of the manifold. Moreover, what it is it's a certain function of q. It's a certain function, actually, of q numbers, where by q number, I mean the following combination. So you take a representation, an ML of the representation. So you take a representation, R, and for every box in the representation, you compute the hook length, the hook length of this box, and multiply them all together, take one over that. This object, in fact, is up to a C number, just a quantum dimension of the symmetric group representation. I'm torturing you with these details because it will actually be important for me. Okay, but you see, not very much enters into what these amplitudes are. They're very simple. So, from these basic objects, by gluing, you can get anything else you want. In particular, by gluing two G minus two PAN diagrams, you can obtain a G-G Riemann surface. Well, pairing up two PANs to get a handle eddy operator, and G minus one of these will get you G-G Riemann surface. So since the amplitudes are diagonal, since this object is diagonal in representations, you just get a sum over representations. D to the Euler character of the Riemann surface, and then, well, Q to this, and then these objects, which are just counting which keep tracks of the degrees of the line bundle, and this object, which keeps track of the actual degrees of the maps, right? Number of boxes. Representations with R boxes corresponds with representations with D boxes correspond to maps of degree D. Right. And in fact, this parameter T, which you put in there, is not arbitrary, but really has a physical meaning, as does the area of this Bayes Riemann surface. Questions? This should really be directed to Brian. So, okay. Now, those familiar with the topological vertex will notice that this formalism, or this idea, is very analogous to the topological vertex formalism, where you get answers for arbitrary toric manifolds by gluing just from knowing maps to C3 with appropriate boundary conditions. So maps to C3 with appropriate boundary conditions localize to maps of this type, which are computed by this topological vertex object, which depends actually on three representations, and it's quite a bit more complicated than anything which we've seen so far. And as I said, by gluing from this, you can compute Gromov-Witten invariance on a generic toric collabial threefold. Well, actually, since the Hilbert space is the same, they're just labeled by Young tableaus, right? It's very easy to combine the two theories by gluing. You can do that for free. In fact, there is a physical question which goes along with this, which is, well, suppose you have a collabial manifold. Adding boundaries on the Bayes Riemann surface, you can think about it as putting D-brains there. You can consider maps with boundaries because they're D-brains, and maps in the presence of D-brains, you can have, maps with boundaries. Now, in addition to putting boundaries on the Bayes Riemann surface, for example, on the three legs of the pants, you can also decide to allow boundaries along the fiber direction. But then you have to put D-brains in the fiber. Okay. And again, there's this miracle of localization, which localizes to maps of very peculiar types. But you see that you can get the answer for this question of suppose you put D-brains along the fiber, so they, one of them, let's say, intersects the S1 corresponding to, well, the fiber of, let's say, L1 is a copy of C, its boundaries in S1, you can consider a D-brain which hugs this S1, so you can have open string maps with boundaries in that D-brain, or on L2. You can get the answer to this by saying, well, I know how to compute this. Take a Riemann surface, cut out an open neighborhood. Now it's a Riemann surface with a boundary. The boundary comes with a label, which is a representation. the boundary conditions of the map. And attach to it the topological vertex. Again, representations have to match, and the sum over all R. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Okay. So this is just a curiosity, but in fact it's a curiosity which will be of some use later, that's why I'm mentioning it. Okay. So we've solved Gödel-Witten theorem in these manifolds until it comes out of here. Okay. So let's then turn on the topological Yang-Mills theory. Okay. So recall we get that by considering n D-branch wrapping a divisor. And the theory on that was the topological Yang-Mills theory, where we turn on particular, with particular combinations of observables turned on. And then the task is to compute this Yang-Mills amplitude. Now, to do this on a general four manifold, it's very difficult, and at present forbidding, as far as I know. However, in this particular case at hand, we are very lucky, and we are lucky because the divisor on which we are this four manifold B has a C star symmetry corresponding to, well, the fiber at every point is a copy of C, and this has a U1 symmetry corresponding to, well, these rotations. You can use this fact, somewhat analogous to what Nekrasov did in context of four-dimensional gauge theories, to localize two modes which are invariant under these rotations. Localizing two modes which are invariant under these rotations, effectively, the theory becomes two-dimensional. It becomes a theory on the Riemann surface sigma, a two-dimensional gauge theory. So more precisely, localization allows you to integrate over fibers, to pick a fiber at a point on the Riemann surface, and integrate and consider this integral. Well, in other words, you can trade the connections along the fiber direction by just the holonomy at infinity. This is why I put the connection to be flat. But this just gives you for every point on the Riemann surface, this gives you a scalar field. Scalar field valued in the adjoint. So, well, just substituting this, you get the topological Yang-Mills action, the topological Yang-Mills theory becomes just a two-dimensional theory on sigma with this action. These two pieces come just by direct substitution. This piece is novel, and it comes from the fact that because the bundle is trivial, there's really no global U1 isometry. You can do it only locally, and this term here captures the fact. Sorry? Well, you started with a topological Yang-Mills theory, so this theory it's twisted, so it's bosonic. So everything is just bosonic. In fact, I've hidden some. At the end of the day, the full Yang-Mills theory just becomes, honest to God, just this theory. So you have a connection on the Riemann surface, an adjoint value scalar field coupled like this. In fact, when I write this, this is a theory which has been studied extensively in the context of physics about, 10 or so years ago, and what is called the two-dimensional Yang-Mills theory. And the two-dimensional Yang-Mills theory is known to be solvable. And in particular, just by integrating out the scalar field phi, you will recover an action of an ordinary or an ordinary Young Mills. Plasma terms in two dimensions. And theta. However, this is not quite the ordinary Young Mills. It's not the ordinary Young Mills in one crucial aspect, one simple but crucial aspect, which is that, well, since the scalar field phi comes from the holonomy around the S1, it's not an ordinary scalar field. It's periodic. It has periodicities associated of the holonomy. Another way to say it is it's really e to the I phi, which is a good variable. So the theory is Young-Mills theory, apart from the fact that this measure for the scalar field phi is somewhat funny reflecting the fact that it's this which is a good variable and not phi itself. So I'll call this theory quantum Young-Mills theory. This theory is, in fact, a close cousin of another very familiar theory, which is Trans-Simons theory on an S1 bundle of degree L2 over sigma. And it, in fact, is the same for at least certain observables, like the partition function and a few others. Okay. So, well, being related to the original 2D Young-Mills theory is definitely solvable. The slightly funny one with this, the quantum Young-Mills theory, being again closely related to Trans-Simons theory, you can also imagine that that is solvable too. And in fact, that's true. So, the quantum Young-Mills theory is solvable. For example, there are different ways to do this, but one is by cutting the Bayes manifold into pieces, which are simple enough that you can actually solve the theorem on it, and then gluing them back together. I'm practicing the analogy with Brian's work. But, okay. Okay, so since we're cutting the Bayes manifold into pieces, the partition function on a manifold with boundaries becomes a wave function. You have to specify the boundary conditions, and it will depend on them. In this case, for example, you can specify the holonomy of the gauge field around the boundary, and then the partition function will be a function of that. It will depend on that. So it depends on the holonomy, and well, given that it depends on the holonomy, a particularly useful basis for the Hilbert space is just spanned it has gauge invariant objects, right, by characters in irreducible representations of UN. So, given any wave function, I can expand it like this, where sum over R is sum over irreducible representations of UN. These, of course, also labeled by Young tableaus. But, unlike in the previous case where I could have arbitrarily large Young tableaus, here Young tableaus run up to n rows. And you can glue two manifolds by, well, to glue this one to another one, changing the orientation on the boundary, this flips U to U inverse, changing the orientation of the boundary circle, and integrate over U. And because of orthogonality of UN characters, this just becomes ZR of the left times ZR of the right, sum over OR. So the Gluon rules, in fact, are the same. And the Hilbert space would look very, well, not quite identical, but similar. Okay. Very good. So a partition function on a manifold with R boundaries will then be labeled by R representations of UN, right?
Doesn't it have a certain that's how you put it into memory.
So your representations are just actually your representations, roughly speaking, times V1, please, right?
Well, yeah.
So.
I guess it's just related to Jim's question.
Yes.
Because on the paper, your representations are more than the high frequency are negative.
Because of the U1 charge, I'm keeping the I'm doing something over honest U1 representation. So that's right. So they're not precisely labeled by Young tableaus. You're quite right. I am summing. Well, if you want, I can sum over all the overall
yeah,
SU and Young tableaus times an additional integer, but an integer value thing. I am doing that. Yes. Okay. So okay. The theory is solvable. First of all, the theory is essentially topologically invariant. More precisely, it's just invariant on the area preserving diffeomorphisms of the Riemann surface, but it's essentially topologically invariant. And as a consequence of this topological invariance, the partition functions are extremely simple. In other words, they're zero unless all three representations are equal. This is, again, very similar to what happened in the Gromov-Witten case. For any Riemann surface, the amplitude was zero unless all representations were equal. Because you were gluing, for example, pants, which vanished under all, unless all representations were equal. So one way to see this is, well, you can insert an operator like this somewhere inside the, somewhere on the Riemann surface. And first of all, it's very easy to see that the theory is that this amplitude is invariant under which point P you pick. In particular, you can decide to move off P to one of these boundaries. Once you do that, this operator, phi, will actually act on the state which you get on this boundary. And so how will it act? Well, phi is this appears in the action as this, plus some potential for phi. Phi is canonically conjugate to A. So taking this fact into account, it's very easy to see that it acts on this representation by actually picking out a particular combination of Casimirs of this representation depending on Q. But Q is arbitrary. Similarly, hitting all the others, again, it will pick out the same particular combination of Casimirs on every boundary. And since Q is arbitrary, you see that the amplitudes vanish unless all three representations are equal. Okay, so this is a huge simplification. In particular, it implies that that the theory is completely fixed just by knowing the cap amplitude. For example, if you know the cap and you know the pant, well, if you know the cap, the pant is fixed. Because, you can get a cap amplitude by starting with the pant and capping the two of these guys off. In this case, you get a relation that the cap amplitude is cap squared times the pant. In particular, the pant amplitude is just 1 over the cap. Okay, so furthermore, the theory on the disk is very easy to solve by an explicit evaluation of the path integral. And by doing this, you get a following answer. So what this answer is, I should not have actually summed over all the representations and stuff. On the left, I have fixed R. So let's forget about the sum. So you just get a dimension of representation, a quantum dimension of representation R. So what is the quantum dimension of representation R? So similar to what we had before, you had a quantum dimension of the symmetric group representation. Take the ordinary formula for the dimension and replace all the numbers by their quantum version. You do the similar thing here. Take ordinary formula for the dimension of UN representation, which is this in terms of the row length of R. and promote all the numbers to their quantum versions. Simple enough. Then there'll be some Q to the some quadratic invariant of the representation R, in fact the second Casimir, times some number. And this number will depend on the will depend on the degree of the L2 bundle. In fact, it will be just the degree of the L2 bundle, where, remember, the Young-Mills theory came from starting with the two-dimensional Young-Mills theory came from starting with a four-dimensional Young-Mills on some L2 bundle over sigma and reducing. In the action, there was this piece. It was essentially a topological action, phi f plus trace phi square with degree of L2 sitting out in front. But this quadratic Casimir comes from this phi factor here with the degree of the L2 bundle in front. Okay, so this is the answer. This is the answer for the cap. And then from this, sorry. Oh, well, now that I'm here. You see, this is similarity to what Brian had. He had the dimension of the symmetric group representation replacing this times, again, a quadratic Casimir. They're closely related. The form is the same. Okay, so this allows us, the fact that we solve for the capital, it tells you what the path is and what the annulus are, and you get formulas like this, 1 over the dimension of the quantum group representation. Again, Euler characters of the base manifold enter, quadratic Casimirs, and e to the I theta times the number of boxes in representation R. Good. So again, starting with this, you can glue these terms to get a manifold corresponding to a genus G-Riemann on surface like this. Now the manifold is closed, it has no boundaries, so you have to sum over all representations. To the other character, quadratic Casimir, and e to the I theta to the number of boxes. Questions? Yes? Yes. Now, that's right. That's true. However, this theory, again, comes from string theory. And string theory insists that to take Trim Simons theory, so this is, again, related to Trim Simons theory. String theory insists to take Trim Simons theory at non-integer level. So the sum of representations actually doesn't truncate. This is convergence, yes. Okay. So this is the answer for this quantum Young-Mills amplitude, and also the answer for the topological Young-Mills amplitude on this divisor D, which is L2 bundle over a Riemann surface. Now, this is supposed to, if you remember, the Young-Mills answer was supposed to be counting all the characters of moduli spaces of instantons. Well, where is this in this answer? Well, in other words, the expansion you thought you would get would be of this type, e to the minus 1 over lambda, some integers to 1 over lambda, whereas I got an expansion in terms of q, which is e to the minus lambda, which are not the same. However, there is this remarkable fact that this n equals to 4 Young-Mills theory and its topologically twisted version have as duality. This was why Vassar and Witten studied it. As a consequence of this as duality, this Young-Mills amplitude is actually a modular form. In other words, it has expansions both in terms of this object and in terms of this object. So you can read out the characters or the characteristics of the moduli space of instantons from this expansion. Okay. Questions? Good. So now let me relate the two objects. So I'll recall again that the conjecture predicts a relation between the two theories, stating that the Young-Mills amplitude is absolute value squared of the Gromov-Witten amplitude, possibly summed over certain boundary conditions at infinity, where the parameters are related as follows, theta n, as follows. Okay, now, before I go on, I have to say a few words about what this relation actually means. Well, you will recall that Gram-Whitten amplitudes are expansions in lambda, which is the genus counting parameter, and also e to the minus t. They're sums over instantons, right, weighted by e to the minus the area of the Riemann surface, right, which they fall onto. So for this expansion to be valid, this has to be small, and this also has to be small. In other words, lambda has to be small, and t has to be large. Now, t is related to n by real part of t over lambda is n. So this is large, therefore n has to be large. Right. So to relate the two theories, you have to consider Young-Mills theory at large n. But small lambda. More importantly, you expect an equality, not as an exact equality, but only as an equality up to terms of order e to the minus n. Why? Well, terms of order e to the minus n are terms of order e to the minus t over lambda. In Gram-Whitten theory, there is no term which goes like e to the minus t over lambda, because it's just an asymptotic expansion. This is precisely why the Young-Mills theory provides a non-perturbative completion of the Gram-Whitten theory. It's more clear. This is an approximate statement. It's an approximate statement of the terms of this type. Questions? Okay. All right. So, by now it's of course obvious that the two theories are actually related at large n. Well, the Young-Mills answer, well, they look about the same, apart from the fact that, well, there's the formula, the dimension of, the quantum dimension of the representation R replaced by symmetric group, by dimension of the symmetric group representation R corresponding to the same Young tableau. Now, it is known that the dimension of a UN representation at n to infinity becomes the dimension of the quantum group representation, or the symmetric group representation, times some factors. So it seems that at large n, in fact, these two expressions become equal. And in fact, if you did this and substituted it in, you would find, in fact, this relation that that the Young-Mills amplitude is equal to the Gram-Whitten amplitude. Which would, of course, be contrary to the conjecture. However, not only is it contrary to the conjecture, it's also wrong. That's right, precise, exactly. That's right. When I write this relation, to say that they're equal at large n, I have fixed the representation R, and then taken n to infinity. In other words, the number of boxes of R is fixed as compared to n. Small. However, for every representation R with a small number of boxes, there's also a conjugate representation obtained by taking this complement, which has order n rows, so which has number of boxes which is comparable to n. So by doing this, you have thrown away half of the theory. You have thrown away all these representations. And of course, the representation R and its conjugate representations have the same Casimir. So they give actually the same contribution, very analogous contributions, to the partition function. And in fact, these two sets of representations, R and their conjugate, will closely be related. R will be related to topological string amplitudes, to Gram-Whitten theory, and R bar will be related to the Gram-Whitten theory barred, anti-topological string theory, string amplitude. Okay. In other words, to say this more precisely, at large n, the Hilbert space of the UN theory splits into a chiral and an anti-chiral part, where a generic state in this corresponds to representations of this form. It has a piece where number of boxes small as compared to the n, and then has this piece of order n boxes. So it's r plus r minus bar. So you have to sum over all representations of this type. This small little here corresponds to topological excitations, and this small complement here to anti-topological ones. Sorry? This is different from holomorphic anomaly. Holomorphic anomaly is a statement of the background dependence. This is not about that. This is honest. In other words, there's a holomorphic anomaly on top of this. There's a background dependence in each piece. Okay, so at this point, it's just straightforward to just sit down and grind out and find that, indeed, you can write the Young-Mills amplitude at large n, summing over this chiral tensor anti-chiral Hilbert space, to find that the amplitude indeed factorizes as a sum of a chiral blocks. So it has, in fact, the leading piece in the sum corresponds to putting all of these these are labeled representations, and the leading piece in the sum corresponds to just setting all representations to be trivial, the first piece. This would just correspond to Gramov-Witten amplitude on X times its complex conjugate, topological times the anti-topological piece. What does work in this? But then there are more terms. What I should have said in the beginning is that, of course, that this equivalence holds with precisely the map of the moduli, the map of the parameters which Ogori, Strominger, and Wappa predicted. Great. Now, what are these pieces? What is the interpretation of the higher ones? Well, the higher chiral blocks with R is non-trivial correspond to starting with X and wrapping debrins on one of these fibers. So at 2g minus 2 points on the Riemann surface, you wrap debrins. And maps to these, so maps will have boundary conditions which depend on representations. You have to specify them, and then sum over all representations. So, okay, the thing you're putting debrin there sounds a bit exotic. What am I doing? Why am I adding boundaries, right? That's right. Very good. Yes. Yeah. So, in fact, when people years back studied ordinary Young-Mills theory, they found the same form of an answer. In fact, they found precisely the same form of an answer, where the ordinary Young-Mills at large n doesn't factorize into. They asked what is the large n dual of a gauge theory. It should be a closed string theory. The same kind of question which we are asking here. The large and dual is a Gramov-Witten theory, which is a closed string theory. So they are the same question. And they found that the large and dual gauge theory has to do with holomorphic maps to the Riemann surface, plus the anti-holomorphic maps. But they also had these maps binding together over 2g minus 2 points on the Riemann surface. Now, remember that. So this is, in fact, the same that we find here. Well, why? Because gluing a topological to an holomorphic to an anti-holomorphic map, you have to specify boundary conditions. Boundary conditions are specified, well, you know that these vectors, that the representation labels stand for boundary conditions. So you would just match the type of the boundary conditions on both sides and sum over all of them. So it's, in fact, the same type of answer. You're right. Okay. But more physically, what the appearance of these debrins means is as follows. One can show that placing debrin in a geometry actually deforms this background geometry, and one can also show, which we did with digraph, that placing these kinds of debrin that I'm doing here is in fact deforming boundary conditions on infinity. So you should, in the context of the closed string theory, the way to understand the sum over chiral blocks is actually a sum over different boundary conditions of the geometry of the Calabi-Yau. Okay. Okay. So let me. Yes. When g is zero, yes, you get a when G0 thinks, you get an analogous formula. A different one, but analogous. This is not applicable for G is equal to 0. The one final ingredient is black holes. So what about black holes? Well, the D4, D2, and D0 bound states, which the Young-Mills theory is computing, are black holes. In particular, if you take a black hole, it's pacified by a triplet of charges, N, N, and M, where N corresponds to number of D4 brains, N number of D2 brains, and M number of D0 brains. And the number of bound states of these brains, which the Euler characters of moduli spaces of instantons are computing, can be thought of as numbers of ways of making a black hole with these charges. In other words, then what physicists call the number of black hole microstates. So this is where the connection with black holes comes in. However, what I have not explained is, why does this counting of black holes that the Young-Mills theory does for you, why does this have anything to do with topological strings? What is the motivation for this conjecture? And that will hopefully be explained, that will surely be explained tomorrow by Hiroshi. So that's all I had to say. Thank you.